Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber. Hello, everyone.
And welcome to another Rocking Chair Sessions, RCS Rocking Chair Sessions with artist and graffiti writer Atomic and Little Violet. Welcome, Little Violet.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, Atomic, on this beautiful rainy day in South Florida. Please tell us, let's jump in and discuss. Let's talk about fatherhood and being an artist. I think the lack of sleeping and all the errands and things that have to be done. How has your life changed post becoming a father? Because this is your second little one, versus how it was with the freedom of not having kids before.
Well, right now, before I get into that, I just want to give the listeners and you guys a warning that I took the red eye last night from Denver, Colorado, and then I went straight to watching my children. So there is no sleep, and I'm on autopilot right now. I have taken a tremendous break, or like slowed up my pace in creating work with my children. I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's amazing, you know, the work and everything else just seems so minor once you have a child of your own. And then I thought that, you know, one child, you know, my son was like amazing, but then to have a daughter on the second child was just like, it's absolutely incredible. I've never, you know, loved like this before, so it's great. I really did a lot of painting before they were born and a lot of traveling, so I think that the legwork is done, and now, you know, I can do my 5 to 7 years of, you know, raising them before they're like semi-independent,
yeah.
And then I can focus on my, you know, studio career, whatever, you know.
But enjoying this age that goes by so quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. Your other son, Leo, correct?
Neo. His name is Antonio, but I call him Neo. My father's name is Antonio, and everyone calls him Tony. So I didn't want to have the same, he has the same name.
Twice.
I don't want to give him the same nickname.
Yeah.
But,
Who do they take after?
I think a little bit of both, you know. They look like a splitting image of both of us, and they have their qualities, but they change, you know. They grow and they change their personality, and, you know, they develop and they grow, and it's really cool to see them. She's like standing up. She's 7 months today, and she's not standing up, but she's pulling herself up and like cruising, which is basically just like walking from like, you know, this table to the wall to the chair.
Small steps.
Yeah, little bit, but she's definitely gonna walk before my son because she sees him running around and she already knows that she has to do that. So
picks it up quicker.
Yeah.
You mentioned something when you got here, which is you normally bring your son along, and when we first met at the annex, actually, for the 51 through 75 exhibit, you got a sneak peek, and Neo was there, and you're like, oh yeah, he comes along with me. And does he go to school yet or not yet?
He does not. I choose to spend as much time with him as possible.
Amazing.
We don't have a nanny or daycare, none of that. When my wife works, I'm watching our children, and then when she doesn't work, she watches them. And I wouldn't have it any other way, you know. These times are very crucial and important to spend with my children. And
yeah,
if I you know, was working a 9-to-5 or, you know, hiring a nanny, yeah, it might be easier to, like, you know, do other things, but you miss out on so much. So,
and he also gets to see the world you live in and the stuff that you do and meet the people you interact with, and kind of sort of like, oh
yeah, I remember that was
February,
like about half a year ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was born March 7th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So she must have been right around the corner.
Yeah. She was. Uh-huh. You looked a lot more rested.
Well, he was also on the red eye, so I wouldn't even be able to stay.
Definitely.
What did you do in Denver, right?
Denver. In Denver, I went to the Great American Beer Festival, and I activated the Tank Brewery booth there. Mm-hmm. They were sponsoring the event. They had like an end cap on the, you know, and I forget what section it was. It wasn't the southeast section of the country. It was like another part of the country that, whatever, they just got that booth because they were sponsors. But they had me paint on 300 cans. So over the course of 3 days, I did my thing on 300 beer cans and just handed them out to people that followed the tank or followed me or posted it or it was just a little
promotional
type of deal. But I had went out to Denver like less than a month ago for the Crush Walls Mural Festival. We kind of piggybacked off of that whole movement and did our own thing. And Brandon Opalka like brought a few of us out there to do a group show and to paint some murals. So I finished up a mural that I started a little less than a month ago. And it was fun. Denver's awesome.
Yeah,
I've never been. Have you been to Denver?
I haven't, but I have friends that are from there, and they just absolutely love it.
Yeah, and Boulder's cool too. We went to Boulder both times, both trips over there. Brandon lives like closer to Boulder than he does to Denver, so it's easy to just bounce right into Boulder.
But he's in Miami too, right?
Well, he's from South Florida, and he's based now in Denver for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
He's been bouncing around for the last probably 5 years with his family, and they've settled in Denver. I don't know how long they'll be there, but yeah, he's up there now. But he comes down regularly. You know, he's always doing stuff. I think he's gonna do a talk this weekend at the Locust Projects, and I think that's it. Then they you know, take down the show. He mentions maybe putting it like in Little Haiti behind Ant Gallery in an empty lot over there. The show's called Antenna, and I think Friday or Saturday night they're gonna do an artist talk and some like live performances, so that should be cool.
So always staying busy.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's a great show.
Yeah, I did kind of catch it.
Yeah, it's a fair coup op. It's three artists, but then this time they added Victor Muniz. So it's still fair coup op, but Victor got involved in it this time around. But they probably hadn't done anything for like a cool 10 years or so.
It's nice to see what they're doing now together. Yeah.
It was great. And I had never been to the new Locust Projects, and I got to meet Charles and talk with the kids at Dash. He teaches over there.
Program.
So that was cool. Yeah, good vibes over there in the design district.
Yeah.
On the west side of it, because it's all fancy on the east side.
It's, yeah, it's like this North Miami Avenue that you buy. It's like, you know, the...
The bougie from the, like, normal.
The normal from the normies. What part of Miami were you born in?
I was born on Kendall Drive in Baptist Hospital.
Nice. Local. Yeah. What schools did you go to growing up?
I went to Devonair Elementary. I was supposed to go to Arvida Middle, but I went to the magnet program for visual arts in Southwood Middle.
Okay.
And then I went my freshman year to Killian Senior High, and then my sophomore, junior, and senior to Western High.
Western.
Yeah, and then I continued to go on to Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale for 3 years studying graphic design, and that was as far as my education took me.
How do you feel that the scene when you first started writing, was that like middle school, high school?
Yeah, when I first, I mean, I was writing in elementary, but it was super amateur stuff, just tagging around my neighborhood and markers and whatnot. I don't think I used spray paint until middle school, maybe at the end of elementary school, but it was different. My neighborhood was wrecked. It was like covered in graffiti, and so was the rest of Miami, and it was inspiring, you know? What I saw in my neighborhood was a little bit different from, like, you know, what I saw in the years after, where I like went to abandoned buildings and saw like full colored pieces and different things like that. Started traveling around the city and seeing more work, and but it was bombed is like a term for, like, you know, covered in graffiti. And the city was heavily painted back then, and I think like towards the late 90s, early 2000s, Miami-Dade County and South Florida really like battled the graffiti problem and painted over a lot of it. So, and then they contained it to Wynwood, you know, with the Arts District and that whole project of the neighborhood turning into what it is now. So it's changed a lot for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Before it wasn't like a international destination for, you know, the largest outdoor gallery or whatever. It was just like local. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a couple people passing through, but not as much as now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You go in there.
Yeah. Also, you said problem. Did you see it as a problem, like growing up here? Did you like when you started to graffiti? Did you feel like you were doing something you were not supposed to do, or that
no.
it's like being like vandalism no. or whatever you
right.
you know people
everything,
call it.
Everything was all fun and games until I got arrested.
Oh,
and
you did
that's
get,
when or no. It wasn't even when I got arrested. It was when I got kicked out of summer school at Arvida. Someone snitched on like a bunch of writers, and I got kicked out of summer school. And my parents, like, who were embracing the art and what I was doing with the graffiti thing, they then like turned their like feelings around about it, and basically like said, no, like, you're not, you know, you're getting into trouble with this. And then it got worse, you know, as mm-hmm. I like started to get into more trouble and whatnot. So
yeah. I could see them not being too happy about you getting in trouble with the law and not finishing school and that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was just summer school.
Yeah.
But so how did you experience it? Like, the also, it's also kind of like the freedom, right, of being in a neighborhood where you feel like you can express yourself. You know, you don't have to be like, you're not confined to a studio. You don't need a canvas, but you see the world as a canvas, right? That's like
correct.
It's like, you know, if you, where did you, is it Brickell, the neighborhood where you grew up? Or?
No, I grew up in Kendall.
In Kendall. Nice. Kendall, yeah. That's for, where we, I'm like still.
Yeah, it's like, I would say it's like 113th Street
it's
and
far.
122nd or 123rd Avenue were the cross streets by where I was at. So I was definitely born and raised in the suburbs, not in the city
yeah.
of Miami or even the inner city of Miami.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely see, you know, painting on the streets as the best way to get your work out there.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're, you know, studying and painting in your studio and you're showing in galleries, then, you know, only the people that visit your studio or, you know, go to your gallery are going to see it. Now it's a little bit different with social media. You can post it and, you know, certain people will see it, but I definitely notice a like boost in followers and just like commissions or, you know, purchases or whatever when I travel and like spread my work to other countries mm-hmm. and cities and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. When were you like at the point where you felt like, yeah, I want to make a career out of this? This is not just my teenage years, my wild years in Miami, you
even
know,
your
where
20s,
like
your 20s when you're still like trying to like find out what you
right.
want to do with your life.
Well, I said I studied graphic design for 3 years, and then I worked yeah. in that field for another like 10 years. So basically I made the decision to stop working as a graphic designer. I had mm-hmm. some life-changing events, and I just said, forget this. I'm not sitting behind a computer screen and doing this. So it wasn't even so much that I like automatically started painting and doing my true passion as a career. It just happened naturally. And I don't know. I guess that was around 2013 was when I started making canvases of my art. But before that, I was still like freelancing. I tried to tattoo. I have a lot of friends that are tattoo artists. So I started to tattoo, and I realized that I wasn't going to be able to like pursue that career because it takes a lot of dedication to be a tattoo artist.
And
a lot
practice,
of, yeah, a lot of practice. And yeah, basically, I would say around 2012, 2013 was when I made the 100% push to just sell my art and sell my creations.
Mm-hmm. So that was about 6 years ago now. 6 years ago from now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When was your first trip out of Miami? Like
my first trip out of Miami was in, I want to say, high school. I went with Quake and D-Tech and a few girlfriends of ours to New York City.
Cool.
I mean, I had traveled with my family, you know, to Puerto Rico, to South Carolina, to Texas, different parts of Florida. Yeah, but the first time I ever traveled outside without my parents was to New York City. And it didn't really start until like 2007 when I left the East Coast. That's when I got the travel bug, when I went to LA. My friend Icon from Hialeah, a Nicaraguan dude, moved out to Venice, to Los Angeles. And we were painting a lot before he left, so we just continued the painting over there. And I met some people that were then like, hey, let's go like overseas and paint Europe. So 2009, I went to Europe, and then I was just like hooked. I was traveling all over the place. Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, Central America, South America, the Caribbean, Canada, like all over. There's still like some places I'd like to go, but I pretty much like done a bunch of traveling.
Where does all travels, where you were like invited, or were you basically you paid it?
I paid my whole way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only until like recently have I started to travel paid. But I still, you know, do my own thing. It's difficult when someone pays your way and pays you and puts you up. You're working for them, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a totally different experience than traveling on your own. You could do whatever you want when you buy your own ticket, right?
Yeah,
you just
freedom.
You do as you please. And it's funny because this last trip out of the country, I went to Israel and Jordan. And when we went to Jordan, we were on like a tour bus, and that was even confining. You couldn't just like go and do your own thing. You had to like stay with them the whole day and then be like ready to get picked up at the hotel the next morning. It was a weird situation with that trip to Petra from Tel Aviv, but it was cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the things you've seen before you even paint is, it must also inform your work, because I feel that initially when you started, you had the iconic graphic, just orange, but I think you've started to explore different colors and combinations of that. When did you first decide, considering your background was graphic design, on that iconic image of the orange?
I actually know.
I don't know, so please share.
It was I was not around for that, and I'm gonna butcher it, but it was a bowl, the Miami orange bowl.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do, but it doesn't look identical.
It was a stadium, right?
Yes, it was a football stadium that
and
they demolished.
And they demolished it.
So in
was
2000,
it here in
it was in Little
close.
Havana.
Yeah.
There was one here, the
in
Miami
Avapada,
Stadium,
right?
The Miami Stadium, the Bobby Maduro Stadium was. Mm-hmm. Was in Alapata. Mm-hmm. That was baseball. Mm-hmm. But football was the Orange Bowl. I never went to any games in the Miami Stadium. I went to a lot of games at the Orange Bowl. And that's what started.
It was small but nice, yeah.
My orange character. And just kept going from there. Got a much better response than just writing my name and doing letters and whatnot. People were vibing off of it, and I fed off of that. And still feeding off of it.
And I feel like it really captures something about Miami, about Florida, about the, it's the color, it's the spirit in a way, but it's also, it's not just an orange, you know, the orange is kind of like, it has a smile, it has a cracked tooth, you know, it's kind of like,
there's a personality
feisty, it's like, it's whimsical, but not so like, it's not princess whimsical, you know. It has like a feisty undertone to it. It's a rebel orange. I don't know how you can put so much character into an orange.
I'm curious
but it's like,
to know, because I told Maria, I was like, man, I'm driving to my house, and this was just last week. I've already counted 5 of them. How long does it take you to paint them now? Because I'm sure when you first started, it took you a lot longer to get the layout, you know, figured out. But
right, it could take me anywhere from like a minute if it's just like one line and only filling in the eyeballs black, mm-hmm. but or whatever color I'm using, or if I'm doing something that's like humongous with a lift and full colored and commissioned, it might take me a month or, you know, several weeks to do. So it could range literally from, you know, 1.5 minutes to, you know, a month of work.
Or a certain space where you might not necessarily have full access to, and you kind of find your way magically in there. How long do those normally have to take?
again, it all depends on what size I'm painting and how much detail I'm giving to it. But it could range from, let's say, you know, 15 minutes to, I don't know, 3 to 5 hours.
Wow.
It could even take longer if it's, like, you know, larger.
Yeah. There was this one on the beach. There was this beautiful building that they were, like, demolishing / constructing. And it was, like, the top story. Mm-hmm. And somebody had tagged a few words. And then eventually they had wiped those clean, buffered them out. And then, but then there was an orange. How long did it take you to make that one on that ceiling?
I'm not quite sure. I'm very, like,
I had security
burnt
downstairs and everything. I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Tommy, how'd you get it?
Right. I went with naps. I think we even may have taken a ladder or found the ladder up there. But once you're up on those, you know, rooftops, it's your best interest to go as high as possible, because sometimes, you know, the ceiling or the top of the building will, like, cut it off or whatever. But I couldn't tell you. I paint as quick as possible.
Okay.
That's for sure. You know, if it's not commissioned and it's not sanctioned, I'm painting as quick as possible.
Definitely. How it makes sense.
I saw this one picture, which I thought it was such a great find on Instagram, where you were taking a picture of a train, like a, how do you call the cargo train?
Yes.
Part
freight. Yeah.
Freight train.
Yeah.
And it had the orange on it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I recently just watched this video about Barry McGee in San Francisco, right?
Yes.
And him and his late wife, Margaret.
Yes.
They were also tagging trains.
Correct.
In San Francisco. And it's kind of like this, also this language of, like, even finding either yourself, you know, again, mm-hmm. when you travel, or they found, you know, different, so you write the year so you could add another year if you see the train again, and
right.
it kind of makes all these connections between the artists, but also between your own work, what you've done before. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The
what that means
trains,
to you? Or?
I didn't really start painting freight trains seriously until probably, like, late 2006, 2007. I had painted freight trains in the 90s, but I got into some problems with local writers. So everything I was doing in the city was getting painted over and crossed out and just, like, demolished within, you know, as soon as I put it up. So then I was trying to figure out how to put my work up and continue to paint without it being destroyed. And that led to painting freight trains. So,
did it get destroyed now by people who painted over white, or just by other artists?
Just
or
by both? Other artists.
By artists, by other artists.
And then, of course, it would get painted over because it just looked like a mess afterwards. Mm-hmm. But, I had a bunch of, like, murals, and they all got, like, destroyed. Mm-hmm. And whatever. A lot of the work that I painted on the freight trains was leaving the city and leaving the state, and it even left the country, going into Mexico and Canada and whatnot. So, you know, let's say 99% of what I painted was leaving, and that's what got me hooked on freight trains. And it's just something really cool. Like, the whole essence of, like, graffiti and like, that spray can art and street art or whatever started from the subways in New York City. So it has that, like, feel. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult out here. There's not much, like, train traffic.
Yeah.
It's just a dead end, right? So it, like, pretty much stops
very
in Hialeah.
Locations.
And, like, trains were very, like, there was no train running by my house. I was taking a bus, like, when I first started doing graffiti. But, yeah, freight trains are awesome. I still mm-hmm. paint them. I love painting trains, and they're awesome to paint.
Yeah, I think they are just visually really stunning too. I mean, especially with the landscape. Also, you captured it on a bridge. That photo is just so incredible.
Right.
But it's also, like, they are usually, like, these. That was, like, this brown or very dark brown. Patina.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It's kind of like a Richard Serra sculpture, almost like that. You know, it's a really beautiful ground
with aluminum
to use for, you know, for mark making, right?
Absolutely.
And then it has, like, this industrial feel to it, but then it has all these stories. Like, I'm really excited.
Well, yeah, once you paint it, you put a fresh coat of paint on it, then it continues to deteriorate and rust and weather. Mm-hmm. They put, like, reflective stickers and reporting marks and whatnot, and other writers will come and do monogram
monikers on top of what you painted, or other, you know, rival writers will come and paint over what you painted. And it's fun to see the mm-hmm. life of a train. I painted a whole car once, top to bottom, end to end, and they painted everything over, restored it back to new, except the door. It was funny that they did that. But yeah, freight trains are awesome, and I absolutely love painting them.
So they really left the door. They were kind of like, we keep the door.
You know what happened? The door was black, and I didn't even fill it in black, because why waste the paint? You know, the door was already black. So they figured, hey, you know, we're not even going to like
change
paint
it
over
up.
This. We're just going to leave it. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a half of an M or something. Yeah. And, you know, just one little like marking or whatever at the top of it.
Yeah. How much spray paint do you go through?
I don't know. I've never counted. I don't keep track of how much spray paint I use.
Is there like a go-to brand or somebody that like sponsors you and
no,
makes you have
I'm,
paint? No,
I'm trying to get sponsored, but up until this point, I've never been sponsored. I get free paint from time to time, or, you know, if I get a gig, I'll get paint from that or whatever. It's not coming out of my pocket, but eventually, like, the bottom line, it does come out of your pocket, because if you're spending money on materials, then it's not going into your pocket. But I don't know. I've painted thousands of oranges, so I've definitely used thousands of spray cans doing the oranges, and then I painted for like 15 years before that of doing my name. So, I mean, it's pretty safe to say that I've gone through, I don't know, you know, 25,000 cans of spray paint.
Do you wear a mask?
I used to not, and now I do. I try to wear long sleeves and wear a respirator and wear gloves these days, because it just ends up being like super dirty. You know, it gets all over you. So, and I'm a little worried about like the
long-term effects.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially now that you have kiddos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you have a space that you would, you know, really wanna spray paint or like do a piece on? And also, would that be? What do you think about like making work like inside, for example, a museum or inside of a gallery space? You know, as compared to being outside and being free and you're able to do whatever you want, kind of in a way.
It's very different making work on canvas or paper or even a wall inside. It's difficult. It's not the same. It just doesn't hold the same as concrete or metal or any of that. So, It's a difference for sure. What is she doing? Like muting my microphone?
Violet is holding on to the mic.
Violet's holding the mic and she's not letting go. So if it sounds a little muffled, just know my daughter
it sounds
is like
pretty good. I got her to think. She's one.
It is a difficult transition to make from, you know, spray painting on the street to spray painting on a canvas. It doesn't hold the same, and it's very difficult because you're working on a large. When you paint in the street or on another object that's outside, you're painting large most of the times. And then when you try to paint that size on canvas or whatever, it's just, or indoors, it's big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Entirely. I was curious about, for example, your experience exhibiting like at Scope versus like you mentioned like rival writers or fellow writers, what were their responses to seeing you in an art fair instead of you just exhibiting your artwork outside? Like, was there like positive response? Was it like, oh, he's sold out, or what how did you feel?
Right. I've never shown at Scope. I showed in some like European art fair. I don't know what the name of it was, but my Italian friend Federico Hausman showed in I think it was in Germany. But I wasn't there. But people throw all sorts of dirt on my name. Like I said, I had problems like in the late 90s or early 2000s, and they'll say all sorts of stuff about me. You know, some of it is true, some of it is fake, you know? So, yeah, there's the whole like, yeah, you sold out or whatever, but I don't really care at this point, you know? Like, I don't even really do graffiti that much anymore. Like, my approach to painting my orange is graffiti-esque, but it's more classified as street art these days, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, or cartoon, or like logo, or branding, or like advertising, or something. It's just not the subculture of like obsessing over letters and doing different styles and whatnot. So,
I think
I could care less what people say.
Yeah, of course. That's very similar thing to a lot of writers that have reached a certain level that they've been recognized as artists, and it's no longer like, oh, you're just somebody who nobody knows, and you're just writing underneath a bridge, and or writing over somebody else's artwork, tagging them, and nobody knows who you are. Like, you, people recognize the branding that you've created for yourself, as well as a few other people in Wynwood. Do you feel that now people seek you out and try to find, like you say, to fly you out to events versus before it was just
you going out on your own? I think so. I mean, little by little, yes. Like, the way that things are going now, that I've, you know, been focusing on studio work and trying to work with nonprofits or whatever just to give back, like, I see a lot of people reaching out, for sure. Especially on Instagram, you know, even if it's just for like a free sticker or like a trade or something, you know, it goes from like the bottom of the barrel to like the top, you know, or what I've experienced as the top. Like, it comes in all forms. Yeah, people are reaching out to me left and right and seeking me out. It's cool to go to other cities and people, like, you know, have seen my work or have photos on their phone or like, hey, I saw your work here or there. Like, it's really cool. Or even like, when someone like stops you and like, it was funny. I was in LA, I forget what the Manhattan Beach or which beach it was, but there's another dude that writes Atomic, or his he's a tattoo artist, Matt Atomic. And I was wearing a shirt with my logo on it, with my smiling orange, and he was walking with his partner, and I was walking with my partner, and he tells his partner, like, hey, look, that's an Atomic shirt. And I'm like, I'm Atomic. I would never say that here in Miami, but I did that time. And he's like, I'm Atomic too. And we called each other, you know, so it was cool. It wasn't like we were like fighting right there, you know, and whatever.
East Coast meant West Coast. That's cool.
Exactly. But yeah, it's awesome. These days, you know, you're very accessible. At least I'm very accessible with the, you know, technology that we have. You know, I'm not represented exclusively by a gallery or any sort of agency or whatnot. So, you know, people reach out to me all the time.
I wanted to ask, in terms of like merchandise, do you feel that being how you are, you're a freelancer in a way, like you are your own boss. You utilize merch as a way of sustaining yourself. What has been some of the merch that you've created in the past that you feel has been very successful? Because it all sells out. And which are things that you might want to repeat? I know there was a mug. I'm dying for a mug.
Mug, yeah. That was some ceramics place in Miami Shores that I did a mug. And I might have done one recently. But what works for me is shirts and hats, as far as merch goes. And stickers. Stickers are like the minimum. You know, if you want an original drawing from me or painting, because sometimes I use paint markers on the sticker, not just ink and pen, that's the cheapest way or the least expensive way to get my original work is by buying a sticker pack. So I say I sell more sticker packs than anything, because it's not like I have to place an order and print them and whatnot, you know. But the shirts and the hats and the stickers, and then there's pins and everything else under
bikini.
The sun.
I saw the bathing suit. Yeah, the one piece.
That's really cool.
They're doing a good job with that. Prankster's killing it with the Colombian bikinis.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
So I was curious also, I guess, the classes that you took in graphic design, do you feel that they kind of sort of set you up with the capacity now that you are a writer to kind of just control and create your own image, your own branding, your own look, your own what you want your stuff to look like, versus people giving you advice or trying to, like, you seek out help? Like, you've already been aesthetically trained in that aspect of like visuals and how to set up type and all that other stuff. Do you feel that those 3 years you did helped you for something?
I think so. If anything, it was just teaching me like the business of the art, because before I wasn't you know, selling my art. I was just making it for myself, and you know, I would get the occasional like room to paint or whatever. But yeah, going to design school definitely helped me learn branding and identity, and you know, but there's a lot of that within graffiti already. So, you know, I had been doing graffiti for a while before going to, you know, design school.
Oh,
so yeah, it helped me out
a lot of people like stopped going because they were like, oh no, this, I don't need to learn anymore or whatever. But I just continued and got my bachelor's. And it's funny because the school, like, it closed, it's done. So it's like, that just shows you how like credible it was. And then on top of that, the degree that I got was a BS. It was a bachelor's in science, so it might have as well been a bullshit degree.
Oh my god, that was in Fort Lauderdale, right?
You went, correct.
Yeah,
in Fort Lauderdale. It's definitely not a BS degree. I mean,
you finished
BS.
It.
It's,
yeah.
BS. You know, what, it stands for Bachelor's of Science, but you could just say that it's a BS degree. And people will be like, oh, you got a degree in bullshitting, right? That's cool. It's not a BFA or BA or whatever, you know? But it's funny because, like, I barely use that anymore. And I believe if you go to school for fine arts or arts, you learn how to, like, you know, maintain a studio or even operate studio visits or whatever it is. It was like starting all over again once I started doing the canvas thing, because, you know, putting a price on a passion is difficult, and especially if you don't have any training or any advice or whatever prior to it. So
do you feel that, yeah, at this point you've maybe build your team of people, like your go-to writer team of people that kind of sort of like they give you feedback, or if you need advice or whatever, like you have people that are not just rivals, like people, like a community of people you trust? Or
yeah, I'm part of several crews. Most of them, I think I'm down with like two or three crews from Miami and three crews from Los Angeles. And then there's like, you know, people that I'm not in the same like collective or crew that I'm friends with and paint with and whatever. But there is people that I will look to for advice or just like, you know, a reference or see what they're doing, you know. But yeah.
But it's also like, did you have to get a studio, or do you have a space at home where you can paint?
I was using, yeah, when I started doing it, I was doing it at my house. And then shortly after, I got a studio space given to me in like an office type of building. And that didn't last long because, you know, I'm using toxic spray paint. So yeah, you have to get like a warehouse industrial type of setting. Really. And I can do a lot of the work in my house with the smaller pieces, with the stickers and whatnot, because I'm not, you know, spraying. But it's not cool to like spray paint in your house or even like on the property, because now with the kids, it's more about the kids, you know.
Yeah.
I would spray paint on my balcony and Brickell, and it wasn't a problem. When we moved out, I just whitewashed the walls and pressure cleaned the floors or whatever, or repainted the floors. But yeah, now it's about my kids and them being, you know, accessible to spray paint or having access to, you know, toxic spray paint. So you don't want them to have that around or be smelling it. So yeah,
you mentioned the initial support of your parents, and I'm sure your parents still support you to this day.
They do. Yeah.
Who in your family do you feel was gravitated towards the arts, like who kind of sort of not held your hand but kind of told you like, oh yeah, like this is a possibility?
I think it was that my creativity, I believe, comes from my mom's mom. She used to make like wedding dresses. She was very good at sewing and making stuff. So it comes from my mom's side, and but like both of my parents embraced it, you know. My pops is very like responsible for, you know, keeping me in touch with the arts and making it a career and whatnot. So yeah, a little bit of both, you know. It's a little bit of both of my parents and then my grandparents and whatnot.
We're just fascinated with our little visitor Violet today.
Yeah, she's a trip.
She's large and in charge. Curious. Okay, so we've spoken about how you grew up here in Miami, and I feel like having traveled the world, just like all the different continents you've been in, why stay here? Like, what keeps you here in South Florida?
Family. Yeah, my family's here. My wife's family is here. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, my wife is here, right? Like, if I would have, you know, settled down somewhere else or met a girl somewhere else, and maybe I would have, you know, stayed over there, wherever that was or may be. But yeah, it's all about family and my wife, you know? Like, I'm not going anywhere.
And your kiddos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my parents are here, and her parents and her siblings are here. My siblings are here. My sibling. So yeah.
I'm seeing how you mentioned like the 90s and the early 2000s. What parts of Wynwood do you feel that you've transitioned through? Because I see it was very cyclical. First it started very much on the outskirts, and then it started going in towards the center, and now there's like certain areas that are kind of like, I don't want to say they're like special walls, but they're like very self-contained, where only certain people could paint on certain times of the year, versus mm-hmm. the more exterior ones where it's like, okay, it's fair game, just do a good job and it's yours situation. How do you feel that's kind of sort of progressed?
Okay. I got arrested in Wynwood last year painting in broad daylight without permission, like I've been doing for the last like 10 to 12 years, and they took me to jail. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is the Arts District. This is what this neighborhood's all about. How are you going to arrest me for doing this? And it just shows you what's happening over there. You know, I was on the outskirts. I wasn't on like 2nd Avenue or Miami Avenue or whatever. I was on the side street. The wall looked like crap. And I was, you know, going to do my thing. And they took me to jail. And I think it was a little bit of like not having permission and also knowing who I am and not admitting to it and whatever. But, yeah, with that being said, it's changed. Wynwood has changed big time. Before, you could paint wherever you want. I mean, I did it for like a solid decade of just painting anywhere I want, anytime. Not anywhere, but mostly anywhere in the Arts District and the surrounding areas with no problem. And now it's a problem. I won't paint in Wynwood without permission.
Ever. For the most part. Which I yeah. think is so... cynical? Is that a word, cynical?
Yes.
Because Wynwood is only Wynwood because of people like you.
Right.
And to, it's kind of like how, you know, artists get evicted, galleries get evicted after gentrification, and I feel like for a street artist to be arrested in a place that only makes so much money now because of street artists like you, and because of all the history that went through, it's cynical, right? It's cynical.
Yeah, it is. I have to say one thing, though, and I was thinking about this on my way over here, that, like, there was a plan for Wynwood. I mean, of course, the original Wynwood, like the Puerto Ricans and the minorities that were painting in this neighborhood in the early 80s, that's, like, completely different than what's going on now. It was a plan from the beginning to bring in all these all-star artists. So, like, the vibe was incredible and amazing, but there was still that underlying tone that, like, these people were being paid good and they were being, you know, paid to, like, boost the property value and the popularity of the area. So it's weird because, you know, we miss one thing, but it was already, like, staged.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's weird how it all happens because it's, like, it was a great feeling, but that great feeling was, like, a false feeling almost.
Was already programmed into that
for
moment,
sure.
Even if it was a good moment at the time, it was already programmed into it to not last because the plan was a different plan.
Yeah,
right?
And people say it all the time, Wynwood is a very dangerous neighborhood, and you know, you wouldn't be found walking here before all these investors started bringing in the top artists and whitewashing the walls and making it all fancy and whatnot, mm-hmm. even through the underground phase when it was still like the original buildings. But it's crazy how that mm-hmm. neighborhood changed mm-hmm. because it's now like, you know, South Beach or Coconut Grove when I grew up. It's like a destination, you know, it's like the hot spot.
Yeah.
And it's insane to see it.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's not going to stop either, right? It's just going to, like, multiply. So, like, that gnarly, like, corporate, like, fresh, brand new vibe that's going on now in certain areas, it's just going to be, like, multiplied. And eventually, like, it won't be an arts district. It'll just be, like, you know, a party area or, like, a boutique or restaurant or whatever it is, you know?
I'm not even sure if it's an arts district or if it's like the entertainment and business district.
Exactly.
Like they always find something new.
Yeah.
I just think it's like really, wow, that's really like, you know, to the way that artists are treated in that way, like especially street artists, right? That they are being kind of harnessed almost for their energy and for their expression, and then they are being criminalized, you know, or kind of like tossed to the side, which is like this
dualistic role. Well, she's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's gnarly. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe I got arrested.
Mm-hmm. We're curious to know what upcoming projects you might have or trips you might have lined up for the future. Yeah, if you want to share that with us, and then I'm also curious if you do art with the kiddos.
Okay. I do art with my kids. They see me doing art, so naturally they're going to, like, you know, help me out or, like, you know, only help me out or until a certain time. And it would be a great help because, you know, like I said, I cut back tremendously on what I was, like, creating and making because of them. As far as the future plans, I have I'm doing the Miami Mega Herf, which is like a cigar yacht cruise for the night. I'm doing it with JD from Drew Estate Cigars.
Cool.
We're going to, you know, have, I think, like 20 or 30 new paintings on a yacht for an evening, wow, which should be cool. I'm going to do a solo show in my gallery, which is also my studio down the street. I'll post that, like, I think late November.
Okay, we've already linked your website to ours, so if you post it on there, then people could go and find you there. Cool.
Yeah. It's weird, though. My website is, like, it just goes to my store. There's, like, a bio. There's a contact.
Hey, if that's what you're about, then.
Yeah. There's a bio. There's a contact and my store. I used to have a reflection of my Instagram page, so there was, like, pictures of my work and a gallery type of vibe on it. But now, like, I kind of just like the mysterious look of, like, going to a page and seeing nothing, you know? Like, you can't really see my work. If you go to my website, all you're going to see is just, like, a couple things. But
so we'll show November.
The Instagram.
Okay.
Is what I would like plug. So yeah, I got the Miami Mega Herf with Drew Estates. I got my solo show at 3100. I got Basil, which I'm going to collaborate with Extra Large from Japan and cool. do a block party in Liberty City,
nice.
Just west of 7th Avenue on 62nd Street in the park right there. There's like a mural of Harry Belafonte outside.
Cool.
They're going to like paint the basket. They're hiring people to paint the basketball court with my graphics that nice. I created. And then they're doing a cool. like release of an edition of 300. I think it's like 300 basketballs that, you know, have my face printed on it.
Cool.
And then a whole capsule of like shirts and whatnot. So it's a streetwear collaboration with Extra Large. I think I'm going to do Dab Day as well. My friends do the medical marijuana dab function a couple times a year, and Basil's pretty big. I might take part in some group shows. I'm supposed to go to Japan right after Art Basel because my gallery in Tokyo got hyped up off of the collab with Extra Large.
Nice.
So I'm trying to figure out the dates for that right now, though, because there's some like issues with purchasing the tickets right now. But aside from that, I don't have anything else going on. I mean, I'll be painting and chilling and hanging out. Yeah. And the kids, you know, I would love for them to be able to like help me paint and get involved in what I'm doing. And I think they will, you know, my son is like always grabbing my markers and my paints and my stuff. And like, whether he crumbles it or like writes all over the stuff or writes on himself or whatever it is, she's super little. So it's not like happening with her yet.
She's just grabbing mics at this point.
Exactly. But she'll be up and running in no time.
You're going to be a singer. Right? You gotta be a singer.
In terms of galleries, do you feel that having Instagram has allowed these outside spaces to see your work in such a public forum and therefore reach out to you and be like, hey, I want to represent you?
I think so, yeah. I don't, like I said before, I'm not like represented exclusively by any galleries, and I'm not really like, it's just kind of like on a per show basis. Yeah. I'm not like flooding a gallery with work
all the time.
And
totally.
Yeah, they're not like moving it, or it's not moving itself, and that's why they're not hitting me up. But yeah, I think that social media is very powerful, and it allows people to find you and contact you for, you know, commissions or representation or shows or whatever it might be.
Okay, Maria has one final question for you.
You've been sitting in a magical rocking chair, mm-hmm. and it grants you 3 wishes. You can wish for anything and everything, but you have to say it out loud for it to come true.
Okay.
So, what are your 3 wishes?
I guess it would. I would just go with the like peace, love, and happiness vibe. You know, peace for myself and my family and the world and my friends and whatnot. And then, you know, love is a great thing. You know, if everyone could just love one another, then the world would be a better place. There wouldn't be all this like craziness that's going on. And then happiness. You know, if everyone's like happy with what they're doing, or just everything, then, you know, the world would be a better place. I would be in a better situation or whatever if I was always stoked about life or whatever it is. So yeah, that sounds kind of easy, you know, like the peace, love, and happiness vibe.
It's the hardest things to achieve. The things that always sound the simplest are the ones that are hardest to achieve. So
right.
We greatly appreciate you visiting and gracing us with your presence and little Violet's presence, because she was a present. She's wearing a little cute, we're going to take the Polaroid and people will see. She's wearing a cute little Christmas outfit. She's in the spirit of Christmas already.
Yeah, well, we explained why I did that, because it's a zipper and not like 12 or 24 buttons
to
do.
She's in the spirit of Christmas.
She just does not want to be buttoned up. It takes too long and she just twirls. She's like a little tornado, but thank you guys so much. Thank you for having me
here, and we're so grateful you came out, because we normally talk to the ladies about being a mom, but you're a true hands-on dad, and that's pretty dope. So thank you for that, and thank you to our listeners for checking in today, October 7th, and we will check you out next week. If you want to look at Atomic's link on Instagram, we have his website hooked up to ours. Thank you so much for checking in, and we will see you all next week. Bye everybody.
Bye.